Blog Talk Radio.
Seems like the more I climb, the hill gets steeper, and the more I rise, see I get deeper. It's like the more I give, see the more it's taken, and the more I'm loved, the more I'm hated.
Tearing down the walls and I'm moving the mountains. I'm stirring up the tea and believing in a change. Putting out the fire, enduring to the end. And they will come when I will shout victory. Tearing down the walls and...
Yes, the day will come when we will shout, when we will shout victory. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leading Change Revolution. This is your platform for unmatched inspiration, and this is the place where persistence overcomes resistance. I'm your host, Daniel Charles, along with my partner,
Choco Bryant.
Choco Bryant, and today we'd like to welcome you to a very interesting conversation under the topic Independence Reflection. Well, Joko and I will take a look at Africa's oldest independent state, Liberia. But just before jumping into this conversation, let me just, you know, talk to Joko out there. Joko, so how you doing, brother? How is the weekend going for you so far?
Oh, yes, I'm doing good. The weekend is going well. Looking up to the conversation today and hoping that we have exchange of intellectual values that will reflect on the image of our society.
You know, for our many listeners out there, we just want to set the basis for this conversation. So a little over 170 years ago, Liberia, a very small country on the west coast of Africa, declared its independence. I mean, you can imagine, for those of you who are familiar with history, during the period of the 1800s, running all through the 1900s, there was a massive colonial rule in Africa. Okay, Africa was strategically partitioned by European nations to serve the purpose of some economic benefit. So in that period, this tiny little country on the west coast of Africa, made of returning slaves from the United States and natives back there, got together, rallied the domestic support, and generated the kind of cooperation they needed to declare themselves an independent state. But the challenge today is that the declaration of independence has sincerely not lived up to its full promise, and political pundits have consistently questioned the significance of such decision. So today, Joko and I are hoping to give a sincere reflection on the burden and promise of that decision that took place over 170 years ago. And our goal is to look at issues affecting the promise of Declaration of Independence, and to as well come up with several different ways in which the little progress made can be expanded and fully sustained. So again, I'd like to say welcome to the Leading Change Revolution. I'm your host, Daniel Charles, along with my partner,
Choco Bryant.
Choco Bryant. Okay, so Choco, one of the key things we want to look at today is, 170 years old. Yes, 170 years old. I mean, there is no independent state in Africa that is even 100 years old. But we have this one country that is about 170 years old. I mean, what really does that that number reflect? You know.
Yes. First, when we look at the history of our country, we tend to look at the reasons that inspired our independence. And the reasons are multiple, but there are key ones that that triggered the mood for people to decide that they wanted to be independent. Now, based on the experience our forefather had in the United States, they did not want to be like subjected again, in some sense, with respect to governance, because they felt they had experienced theirs, and they decided that they wanted to be on their own at the time. And so they decided to establish a political system. But they did not understand that there was some consequence with respect to the lack of maturity in establishing the system. And despite our political institution being structured similar in nature to the United States, we have still lacked the fundamental values that retain the integrity of those institutions, simply because those forefathers just replicated the institutional norms from the United States, and they decided that we can be on our own, we can copy the model of governance, we can subscribe to democracy, and maybe capitalists in the political, the economic system as well. But they did not understand the consequence, and yet they went through it, they went for it, and they became independent. So in a nutshell, the independence of Liberia is inspired by some sort of anger that was experienced by the forefathers in the United States when they had to go through troubling times, being slaves, and ultimately resulted into three rebellions, which were the Cato, Natenda, and then Mafisi rebellion, that ultimately led them to be shipped back to Africa. So, I mean, they did not understand the consequences, did not understand the outcome, they were not mature to self-governance. And that, in some sense, reflects to today the trouble that we encounter.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, we have read lots of the different challenges, you know, about, you know, why we as a people, especially in the case of our forefathers, you know, took the decision. And you highlighted some of those points very keenly. And from my perspective, over the years of reflection, I have narrowed down many of my analysis to two things, okay? And I know it falls into the scope of discussion today. Is the idea for me, it's to look at the huge challenges that they face, especially when you talk about the issue of slavery, suppression, and segregation, and put that on the table, and then at the same time, to compare not just the desire for independence, but the readiness for independence, and to talk about which needed to be at certain level and why before the declaration of independence. But I've looked at all of that, and one of the little paper that I always reflect on is, do you remember something we read back at a university, Joko, called the Remonstrance of 1823, right? You read that piece of document. So that document was a document expressing a bunch of dissatisfaction, you know, a huge chunk of dissatisfaction from our forefathers that left from here, and they were actually expressing that that dissatisfaction to the American Colonization Society and all the authorities thereof, you know, channeling their frustration and stressing their desire to the fact that it didn't really matter what was going on, whether they had the military, whether they had the economic capability, whether they had the authority to do whatever, but they felt that all they needed was to to govern themselves. And to be all critical about this, I've come to the resolve, you know, that I have accepted that that was a rational decision. That decision to me had wisdom in it, and we cannot continue to challenge the decision in solidarity of questioning whether they were capable of not. But if we look at what went on, the desire for freedom today, with their early quest for freedom, we see how it is very important. And I support the decision. But what I continue to even support more and more is the challenges that came out of that decision needs to be addressed. And the focus of modern political pundits should really, for me, be on, you know, what went wrong, not just holding the Independence Declaration in context. Because for me, I look at the spirit of the independence, that spirit of the independence. If that spirit had been around the country all these years, then there is no reason why we shouldn't have been developed. Because number one, you follow the Independence Declaration, there were challenges, but the country held together. I mean, there are several different meetings, you know, the formation of our flag representing the different territories and the debates, the analysis. That desire to be free should have been maintained along the way for the desire to be truly economically and politically independent. And I think that is where we have been missing the ball, and that is actually what we want to talk about today, you know, rather than just challenging this decision of the independence. I don't know whether you agree with me on that.
Yeah, certainly I do agree with you that the decision was... we shouldn't challenge the decision,
And then you see, most of the time, and Joko, not to cut you off, a lot of our brothers, I don't know, they go ahead and they challenge the decision all the time. I don't know whether people have really gone through the thought process of history, like you said, all of those rebellion, the desire to be free, and then going back to find this piece of land, and people still controlling you on this piece of land, in spite of being miles away. What else could have been done? You know?
Yeah. I think the forefathers, I mean, they were emotionally distressed. And they had to go for it. They went for the decision. They made a decision. And at this time of our lives, there's no need to challenge the decision. The only thing that is necessary to do is to be able to, first of all, understand the fundamental values that we as a nation can use to thrive and develop, in that our desire to be independent will be highly respected. Anything on the contrary to that, I mean, it will always like permeate the public that indeed we rush independence, but ultimately we did not have that strength, we did not have that capacity to be independent. But yeah, we wanted to be independent because of that anger that we've experienced in the past. But let's go forward instead of challenging the decision. Fast forward to the time that we've been independent. Now, we've established a system, and our entire political and economic system replicates the United States incredibly. But we have failed to maintain these values that will keep our system being effective, in the sense that the basic social services will be equally distributed. We have some level of stability, and we have a unique system wherein we're gonna protect our sovereignty. But now, one of the things that one of the things that has impacted us is that the free slaves returned, and then they met the natives. So that creates another sort of ambivalence, in the sense that these people that we met there, they do have their own frame of mind. So the free slaves created a sense of dominance, wherein they're going to sit and dominate the free slaves that the natives they met there. So that pulls out another problem. And that, I believe, in my opinion, is the history of the Congo and native and crisis that we encountered today. That we live in the United States, we have lived certain way, and these people are natives, they have lived certain way. So they create some sort of dominance that will be able to manage the system, will be able to manage the government, will be able to manage the economic system and dominate them. And so with that sort of dominance, they have forgotten the actual focus and the purpose of which the South independence. And that in return came back, and it's like it has hunted all in a way that we have lost focus, we have lost direction in terms of maintaining our values, in terms of upholding principles that are in line, that are parallel to the values of democracy. So, I mean, I think the division is one of the major factors that try to fuel in the kind of unpreparedness that we are today in the committee of the nation.
I fully share that perspective with you, because trying to highlight some of the ills now that we have had to deal with over the 170 years, it's indeed our own form of little internal segregation that the free took back home. You see, and I know for sure that it was not the intention of many of these people to just copy what was happening back here and just create a system of dominance back home. But I know also there were issues of some social barriers that led that. And the way we need to address that today, which you've already, touched base on, is to look at how do we create our social, political, and economic system that tends to impact our people as a whole, but not to impact our people as a segment, or maybe as a specific tribe, or maybe as a specific social class, a specific social group. So because the thing is, the capping too of the American political system had, or obviously, has its own advantages and disadvantages. The first thing was that it was clear from the beginning of the formation of the United States that they were going to build a very strong economy based on the market system. And obviously the market was dominant in a way that obviously certain people who managed to get at the top of, market share would dominate the economy. Now, back home, there was this sense of clear understanding that we needed to forge even the different set of economic principles in a way that it matches our cultural, social, and spiritual beliefs of how we want to develop our country. That was missing. So today, even our educational institution is hard to distinguish their foundational principles and separate it from the United States or other parts of the world today as we see it. But this conversation we are having is to provide a new reflection and a new dimension to how we need to move forward. And today it's hard for us to sit down as Liberians and look at exactly, who we are and what are the distinguishing values, like you spoke about, that we need to have. And those values don't really need to be photocopied. those values just need to be our values, you know, and they need to be espoused in a way that represents us as a people. And then those are some of the things that are missing. Those are some of the things that we need to talk about. But let's just come to this, you know, the inception of the Congo and native thing in the politics. I've always considered that a challenge, and I've always felt that the way national leaders have dealt with it, you know, has almost always, you know, been very ineffective. You know, the way we dealt with it, starting from, you know, the Progressive Revolution, we dealt with it hoping that at the end of the First Republic and the inception of the native rule, the native will also dominate. And that's a problem. That's a problem. A certain group has to come to the realization and recognize that whether some people came from America or whether some people came from Congo region and, you know, up there in the Malian kingdom, we went to this tiny place and we made it our home. And it is the land of the free. It's the home of liberty. It is a place where all come to rest. And what we needed to do was to make it a beacon of hope in Africa for everyone, not just even for us as Liberians. You know, and like I said, it has not been recognized yet because the natives still feed the shrew and the Congo still feed. They were ousted out of power. So there is a need for a serious conversation to have a reflection around why we need to come together and see this country very differently. And I don't know whether you have issue with this, Joko, but sometimes when I sit down and look in our history, you know, this idea about the end of the First Republic, have you thought about it, you know, very carefully, Joko? That end of the First Republic is not just a historical term, but it's something to say that, okay, this is the end of Congo rule. You know,
yes, that's so
if you categorize Congo rule, are you trying to say there is no more, you know, or there is no more room for a Congo person to be president of this country? You know, or if the Congo president return, is that the beginning of the second or third republic? You know, I mean, some of these things create conflict in our history, and many people don't look at them. And many people don't even challenge them. And that's why it's important to sometimes challenge these views. Okay? And my perspective on it is not criticizing it. Looking at the form and manner in which it was, you know, written and revealed. And what was the intention? You know, what was the intention? I mean, in the American Constitution, or not just the American Constitution, but the American history. Yeah, I mean, you have a white president, but there is no way that somebody is going to write a book and say, you know, after George left office, it was the end of the first American Republic. And the second Republic is going to be beginning Obama. That in itself forged a perspective for, you know, the bringing the pieces together of historical scourge that affected our people and say, look, we have ended this period in our history. Now we're moving forward. But what happened? You still have all the Congo people cheering back home who feel this in China, feel dissatisfied. And you still have all those natives who feel you people rule us for so long. You didn't do anything. That is not fair enough to even write something like that. What is even more prudent is to bring children, Congos, and natives together to have a reflection about a country that belongs to all of us. And the way we move forward is to disregard the thinking of our people in history and in a new way as new generation leaders, that whether your name is a name that hails from Bokonjile and somebody else's name hails from Minnesota, the United States, as a free slave son, it's just one country that we have. You know? Yeah. I don't know what you think about it.
Yeah. I think with respect to the end of the First Republic, I think it was very important in our history. But what makes it to have a different look is the internal perceptions of people. Now, the end of the First Republic, definitely, it was well embraced, especially by natives, because it was a decade of institutionalized system of hegemony and dominance by free slaves. And so, with that, natives felt disenchanted. They felt that certain needs would not make it in government, and that how society was stratified, that how society functioned at the time. So that is a very important and a milestone in our history. So we should consider that as important instead of going back and thinking that we were dethroned, and so that evolves another feeling and we're going to fight back and reinstate a Congo hegemony or a Congo rule or dominance. No, that's not an issue. But all of these things tend to persist when we fail and continuously fail to teach the way in which we design our education system, the way in which we teach, the way in which we learn. Now, one of our failures have been trying to instill some sort of a macro-nationalistic symptoms or mindset or frame of mind in the young people. And looking at our education system, we just design a way of teaching and a way of learning that does not in any way reflect our history and our cultural values. And those are very important. Now, if you look at lately, we were in school at the time when we were in high school. We did history separate from civics. That was important. But later did I learn that government had changed the curriculum and got rid of civics and pretended to enshrine it in history. The history that which they have combined them, the history itself does not even, significantly does not even impact why we reflect or represent. We still yet teaching more of Mesa Kanga Musa, the Malay Empire, the Cocos, instead of teaching about Albert Port, instead of teaching about Edward Wilmer Bloody, instead of teaching about the struggle, the Red Riot, 1979, instead of teaching about the fall of the First Republic, what are the importance of these things, what are the values, and how can we as a nation forge forward? And those frame, those continuous teaching and are likely to build a sort of a frame of mind in our young children, in our generation, to be able to be able to overcome that mindset of segregation and create a unified approach towards national enhancement. But we do not do it. Instead, we focus on something else and just scribing towards our individual self greed, and that I believe is counterproductive to national growth, and that has been one of the problems that have continued to impact our society and help to shape the way we live our culture.
Yeah. So. Great analysis. If you're just joining us, this is the Leading Change Revolution. This is your platform for unmatched inspiration, and this is the place where persistence becomes resistance. Today, Joko and I have been discussing independence reflection, a look at Africa ODS Republic, highlighting few challenges from the independence towards the management of the national development activities, and how we move forward. This has been the first half of the conversation. We'll be taking our break right now, and then we'll come back, like I said, the second half of the conversation. We will look more at economic, political issues, and then we'll look at providing recommendations on way forward. So stay tuned, and please join us as we come back from our break.
Not only freedom physically, but freedom of the mind, freedom of my spirit. In Jesus' name, amen.
Don't leave me out cause I'm black. Don't leave me out cause I'm white. Leave me cause I'm treating you wrong and I'm supposed to treat you right. Oh, don't leave me out in the cold. Treat me like I'm 12 years old. That I'm from Africa and I can stand wherever I want. Oh, I can see it so clearly. Soon as I stare in your eyes, yeah, you're making more money than me. It don't mean I'm not qualified. I wake up every morning, smile on my face, thanking the Lord for giving me another opportunity to feed my family. Oh,
I try to come up. Hold me down, first you let me in, then you kick me out.
Then somebody tell me, what is a man to do?
I pray to the man of God, stop the hate and show me some love.
Turn the chapter 126, all she wanted for us was
freedom.
Freedom, freedom is priceless. Freedom is all we need, and freedom is all we seek for every soul. Welcome back to the second half of this discussion. I'm in studio with my brother, Joko Bryan, and we are back on this discussion. So Joko, now here we are talking, you know, about the independence reflection of this old estate in Africa. And, you know, just back to the issue of the independence, I like to consider our decision to declare independence in 1847 as something of rather more far-sightedness and inspiration. And though it had the issue of frustration and anger in it, but, I mean, just look at what we did. Right after we declare independence, I think 38 years later, you saw what happened at the Berlin Conference, right?
Yes.
You saw what happened at the Berlin Conference. It's like almost the leaders of Liberia, the free slave, they came here, they felt they didn't know what was taking place in America and Europe and other places. So when they went back home, they declared independence. 38 years later, the entire Africa was partitioned to serve economic benefit in Europe and other parts of the world. So, you know, you look at that decision too. The only thing that left us out of that partitioning ceremony was that when people come around, they say, "Oh, there is an independent government here." So to partition them, it means we either had to use force, or you know, do something else. But you know, those are some of the benefits that you can look at today, that you can walk around as a Liberian. You can walk around as a Liberian. And look at some of the benefit, because what happened is that people there, like Mandela and other revolutionary leaders in Africa, had to go and hide in Liberia as a safe haven to give their struggle rebirth. You know, so I mean, somehow I believe we've lost our place due to the way our leadership has handled a lot of different issues on the African continent as well as around the world, and we need to in our place rather than complaining about why we declare independence so early. I think that should be our focus. But,
yes.
But let's go back to look at a couple of things right now, Joko. We've been talking about our economic institutions, the social, political, and educational institutions. From my perspective, what I think we need to do, everything boils down to a vision, and that vision should be tied to a philosophy. Our schools should be built for certain reasons. The way we establish our healthcare institution must be tied to a philosophy and a vision that encompasses the well-being totality of our people. And not just in words, but, you know, in putting in the various effort that demonstrates the harnessing of local resources that brings that vision to life, that makes that philosophy live. That if you see health workers, they are motivated to tell you that this is our vision for the healthcare system. Not somebody sitting there and saying we're waiting for the senator who is in charge of health in the legislature to put in budget, and that's the only way we will work. There needs to be this national rallying. This, you know, like I said, Joko, one thing we should not forget, as tough as it was, even the native people came together to accept the independence. Okay? As we all know, they were challenged, there were difficulties, but the natives themselves, they came together and accept that, yes, you know what? This country is independent. The next thing we have to face is our own internal challenges, which no country can say that, you know, they are immune to. So it's how we fix our internal challenges that matters a lot. But looking really at understanding and challenging the philosophy and vision of our institution. Because, take for instance, what do we want the Ministry of Commerce to be? Liberian commerce. How do we want to impact and change the lives of our people? Okay? Our marriage, the Liberian company, all of these are social enterprises that we develop in government ministries and line agencies we develop, it doesn't just require a consolidated effort. It requires a clear vision and a clear philosophy that employees can buy into, that ministers, that, you know, that directors and heads of corporations can buy into. And people should see themselves working in different fronts, but as a team for a collective effort for driving a country and to make that country stand out. That is where I think we are missing right now. It doesn't matter, Joko, whether you're from Logadou and I'm from Maserato, and my name is Daniel and your name is Brian and somebody else's name is Wirimoga. I think that thing has been clouding our judgment. We need to come now to understand that what the native man needs is the development of his people, and what the Congo man needs is the development of his people, and together, all of those people are Liberians.
Yeah, you are right, Daniel. You see, one problem that I had, and I'm yet to understand why people keep persisting the sort of intra commotion about Native and Congo. Native Congo. It's like, if someone says, this man is a Congo man, I mean, it just, it's a way of life that the people, the free slaves, went to Liberia. They had their own way of life. They most likely were attuned to some sort of a modernization, say a Western civilization, so they just consider themselves this name. So, if for any reason that they intended to come and have an integration with the native and create a wholesome functioning society, I think by now we should have graduated from that native and Congo syndrome, because those names are just a way of life.
Which I agree with you. I agree with you.
They are abstract, but it puzzles me today to see this as a problem. That should not be a problem. So let's get away with it. Native Congo, it was just a way of life. Natives lived back here. They were indigenous people. It was the way of life. And now Congo people came, the way they live, Western civilization, they attuned to Western civilization. Now it's their way of life. But the integration and combination of the both groups, it creates a different new brand, which is Liberian. Now,
Jogo, here is the thing now. You asking us to get away from it, you know, try to include in your conversation ways how we should. Because as you and I know, it's a big issue in this 2017 election. You have people who are very close to becoming president of the country making statements that are divisive and embedding this Congo and native line.
Yes. And, you know, the reason is, I would tell you one of the reasons that for which the people try to persist the kind of native in Congo struggle is that some people, like, seeking presidency, they also believe that people who have lived long in the United States and who are influential may impact the electoral system in another way. It may not be negative. So that is a sense of solidarity. That, look, if I claim and continue to persist that cling onto my identity as this Congo man, I'm likely to be supported by those big guys that are in the United States that are likely to be influential in the system. And we're not doing anything with ourselves with this. We're hurting ourselves. Instead, let us create an integration that, look, we are Liberian. Congo was the way of life. Native is the way of life. The best way forward right now is to, first of all, invest in research. And I recommend this to the coming government. Invest in research. Invest in people who will be expert in educational psychology, people who will design our curriculum that will fit in our cultural values and our principles. And with that, we found our children being indoctrinated, inculcated with these values. And there will be a great shift in the paradigm. Now, the reason for which the persistence of racism in the United States is because in the suburb, the middle-class suburb, the reason for which a 17, 18, 20 years old child will be a racist is because he or she inherited it from his parents. They sat in conversation and listened to their parents say, these black people or these people of color. So now, until they can come to school and understand diversity, and the mind become changed, the paradigm shifts, the mentality, the perception, they go back to the suburb. And sometimes they resist the parents' sentiment. Mom, Dad, this is not it. They are not these people. So it's about education. It's about how well we design our system, but how well we design the fabric of our system, how we teach, how we expect our kids to learn. That's important.
Jogo, you described a very serious point regarding this Congo and native issue, and I'd like to reemphasize your point. And I've always had that same perspective. Congo is a way of life. Native is a way of life. And here is the key issue today. Like you said, even some of those young men who grew up as natives, who changed their style of life, became highly educated, came to America, they went back home, and people are considering them Congo. So people need to see that it's definitely a way of life rather than a lynch that is attached to totally disrupt our forward march in our development process. But in addition to that, what I stress and what I keep stressing and what you just added to, look, a vision and a philosophy for the development of our country is the ultimate turning point for how we move that country forward. And I've always said this, Jogo. The only way you can develop a country is when people buy into the vision. The challenge with Liberia right now is that I don't know whether it is the leaders that are not marketable or it is the vision that are not marketable. And you know, Jogo, because t- take other countries, for instance, right? You have places like South Africa, right? Today, they're asking for economic liberation. But what happened is that during the Mandela struggle, a majority of South Africans bought into the vision of the Rainbow State, which led to the political revolutionization of South Africa. And you could clearly see how that policy sealed and gave a lot of black people in South Africa the freedom to challenge, go to school, do things, even though today, due to the fact that many of the economic system that were entrenched to the white, some of the black took over now, the ANC took over, people start making backroom deals, so they are challenging their brothers and sisters. But what I'm trying to say here is that the late President Thabo used to try to do, you know, people from mat to mattress, higher height, hold some function in society. You know, Joko, if, for instance, you have a president who sells a national vision and people buys into that national vision, ministers are working, representatives are working, senators are working, directors are working to make sure that that vision is alive, the country will be easier to develop. You know, so that's my challenge for me right now, to understand as to whether it is the leaders that are not marketable, or it is the vision that they present are not marketable, or, on the other hand, is it an issue of integrity problem? Because that obviously has to be an issue.
Yeah,
and you understand?
It is an issue. It is an issue. But
go ahead.
Yeah, it is an issue. And I think the issue is that before developing or creating a vision, you must have vision. So,
yeah.
A vision has to be sustained by vision. Now,
yeah.
these people don't have the vision. I don't see it at because if the vision had been developed and existed for a certain period of time,
what about poverty reduction strategy? What about vision 2030? What about Charles Taylor vision 2024? I don't know. That's what I'm asking. Is it the vision or the leaders that are not marketable? But Jogo, before we go forward,
yeah.
Jogo, we just been joined by our brother Charles from Maryland. Charles may like to contribute to the discussion, so let me have Charles coming in, okay?
Yep. Hey, good morning.
Hey,
good morning, guys.
Mr. Yen, welcome, my brother.
Yep.
How you doing?
Welcome. I'm fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The discussion is very interesting, and these are things we really need to be talking about if we should see our countries move forward, comparing to others that we see the international community right now. People are really trying to go forward, but I'm thinking if we are really making some effort to move forward, you know. And for me, I don't know if our politics is deceptive or if it's really honest. That's one of the problems, because people who aspire for political office or offices, they say something positive, but when they get into office, you see them doing another thing far from what they promised. That is the problem for me. And I can also be thinking if there are some other factors that hinder their agenda for which they don't let the public know. And, you know, so how do we combat the issue? How do we overcome? So those are some of the challenges for me. I don't know if our leaders are really patriotic or they only get into office for their own gain. You know, so because if you look at all leaders, if you look at all the struggle, then when the guys are also have power, they see all the ills. And you can only develop, you can only do good when you know the problem. So they identify the problem, but then the challenge becomes to implement and to overcome. When they manage the resources, they make allotment, they do everything. But then to make progress becomes the problem. So I'm thinking if we really need to carry out a research to do the actual problem, to see how we can overcome this problem, to see how we can move our country forward. That's the problem for me.
Yeah. Joko just stressed there is a serious need for a serious national development research. I mean, Joko, here is the key issue. Do you know that a lot of our development data are missing? We don't have most of our policies are not strategically informed. And even the president admitted to this on several times, you know, and even the Liberia Institute for Statistics and Geoinformation Services, they started complaining on the issue of half data, half cooked data. You know, so there is a serious need for national development research. I think I really want to reemphasize that. But Joko, you wanted to talk about that issue of integrity problem.
Yes, as I was saying, it's not an integrity problem. What I see it to be is that it is a problem lacking vision. Now, you talk about vision 2024, you talk about poverty reduction strategy. Based on the nature and the outcome of this vision, the quote-unquote vision I called it, I categorize it as legacy. People come to power and they want to leave certain things behind. And unfortunately, the system has not gotten controlled in a way that we will continue on blueprint. And so somebody comes and initiates a vision, and with that purpose, internally, like, I left the legacy. But he does not do anything to protect the fabrics of that vision, that indeed it will be retained, it will be sustained, and it will have an impact on the society. So I don't see currently. I don't see these things as integrity problem. I see it as being visionless, because we're not putting together mechanisms to be able to structurally strengthen the various elements of the vision to be able to have a trickle down effect on the lives of the people, to be able to impact every facet of the society. As much as we do not do it, I mean, it's not a vision. In its nature, it's not a vision. It's just a legacy that this XYZ person did this. But in the end, it was not sustained.
You know, but Joko, you know, here is another thing too, like I said, like Charles was even saying. I mean, there's also a problem of honesty and integrity in this thing too. Because you see, look at what happened when people are outside of government, like Charles was talking about. You and I have been over there and we have seen people speaking. People identifying the issues, identifying the challenges, people winning the support and the motivation of audience to them. And some of the people go to power, they end up submitting and defending the status quo. That has a whole lot to do with individual integrity. You stand, you understand? Addition to where you and I, we do research, we know that the individual strategy where all international documents copy into, and even the Vision 2030 or what they call the Agenda for Transformation, I don't know whether it was really holistically built with local support, or I don't know whether you know about that, but what I know is that they had some basic consultation and then they went to Banga and then they declared a Vision 2030. I don't know what you know about that, Charlie, but I know for sure the way we develop a vision as a country is caught across the different spectres of our society, the different sectors, and make sure that we take into account that means of integration for economic benefit of all. And it's not hard. Liberians want to see the healthcare system fully improved and well functioning. We want to see qualified teachers. We want to see productive students. We want a system where the government is not the largest employer. So we want an economy that works from harnessing local resources. These things, I don't know sometimes what is what we write on the paper or what, but every case be. Brothers, we have about 5 more minutes on this discussion, and I would just like for us to focus more now on what can we recommend moving forward, okay? You know, that's the key right now, because we have highlighted a lot of these challenges, but what can we recommend moving forward? And we too must not consider, like you said, Joko, our recommendation as a legacy, but we should go in the field to fight for our recommendation. And we should hold ourselves accountable. We should hold ourselves trustworthy. We should hold ourselves responsible if we go and fail, right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
So let me just start. For me, when it comes to, like you were just saying, integrity, I look at accountability and I find it to be a problem. So, like, you don't have institutions like, you know, economic crime court. When people commit economic crime, they go to court and you serve your days. There is nothing to create fear in public leaders, so you can do anything. You leave one office to another, you know, and morally people are corrupt. There is no standard. There is nothing to hold the people accountable for what they do. You hear somebody say something and you see that person posting in an office. There is nothing to check guys. So the issue is, before our society really moves forward, there should be some institution. There should be, we need to have an informed country or population, and then you should have institutional bill to, if it will be pressure group or if it will be, so, yeah, but there should be something to check public leaders. There should be something put in place so that people will feel accountable when they do something. If it will cause you to go to jail or if it will cause you to lose your job, you know, these things should be put in place. That should be the beginning. And then when we start building, like if a teacher is corrupt or if you're corrupt or, you know, if you misbehave, you should be called a book and you shouldn't leave a job for another one. So these things should be put in place and our public leaders should hold these things high so that this should be an example. Then you will see when teachers are correct, when they are straightforward, the students will study hard. And you see police will not accept bribery and everything will go on straightforward, for in my own opinion.
Okay.
And I think when we put these things in place, things will really be straight for our country.
Thank you very much for that, Charlie. Joko, Charles talk almost all the time. So what's your quick recommendation in a minute?
Yeah, I think the society is polarized, and I think we have a problem. And in terms of a remedy, the best thing is to strive for accountability, to strengthen our legal system, to have faith and confidence in our legal system. As much as we pursue that, I mean, the outcome is going to be immense and impactful. So let's continue fighting. Let's continue striving to make a change, but making a change with the frame of mind that we will give account of everything we do, despite positive or negative, so that way everybody keeps that in mind, and that becomes a culture that we as Liberians, we are accountable to this nation, and we must act or perform in ways that are parallel to the values, the fundamental values and principles of our democracy and our culture.
Yeah. I want to thank you very much, Joko, for your recommendation to strive for accountability. You and Charles are almost on the same path. And I'd like to say thank you to all of you, our listeners. Thanks to everybody for joining the Leading Change Revolution. We will be here next month on the second Saturday and the last month discussing inspiration and as well as leadership issue. This is Daniel Charles. This is your host for Leading Change Revolution, along with my partner, Joko Bryan. My final recommendation, like my brothers have said, have always, you know, I've always thought about this. Democracy has two players. The people we elect and the people that elect the people that get elected. You can't elect the people to go and play and then you don't play. It's time for all of us as Liberians to wake up and participate fully in our democracy. If we start being spectators, we can be able to channel our grievances in a way that holds people accountable, like Charles said, like Joko said. We can make sure that we transform the system in that direction. And so I'd like to encourage all of us to not stop, but to keep on trying. Because if we keep on trying, together we can create the new path for a vision that takes that country into complete development ascendancy. And that ascendancy will be fully sustained. Thank you. This is the Leading Change Revolution. See you next time soon.